Thanks for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I am Haley Steele, and thanks for joining us today. We have a special episode for you. Episode 55 is about CMMC, the journey from 1.0 to 2.0. And as part of that, we did a webinar event back in the beginning of January and decided to turn it into a podcast. So on our podcast today, we have joining us Pete and John from Synergex back for another round. And we also have our very own Richard Sullivan, who is one of our business development advisors at MassMEP. So sit back and enjoy the show as we begin. We'll start with Pete, who's going to tell us a little bit about why we are here today.
So what I'd like to share today is what's the latest news in CMMC? What was released? Like, we're here because in November, everyone heard that, the DoD released some major changes coming to CMMC. So what are those changes? What might those changes look like to you? And how do we move forward from here? And then if there are some questions, answer those questions on how this affects your organization moving forward. We are moving to this three level rather than the initial five levels. We're reducing, the DoD listens to the organizations like yours that are hey, there's some concerns about implementing these 130 controls that you're asking us to do. There's some concern about funding and the complexity of implementing this. So they took a step back and said, okay, what can we change? What can we, how can we make this easier, but still enforce the security level of CMMC? So that the whole goal was to implement very high level practices in smaller organizations to protect your company and the CUI data that you might have or contract data from cyber attack or cyber espionage. So they built this three level model. We're taking a step back to in level two, just meet the original NIST SP800. 171 model. So back in 2013 or thereabouts, NIST was rolled out. Everyone was asked to self-attest to NIST. CMMC came out 1.0 and said, okay, everyone, whether you're a level one or a level five, you're going to have to go through some certification process. So there'd be these third-party certifiers coming in to say, okay, we've assessed your organization. This is where your gaps are, what you need to close to be at a level one through level five. So now it's just your level one basic cyber hygiene practices. That all that's going to require is your annual self-assessment. So again, in 1.0, level one did require every 3 years being certified by a third party. Now it's just annual self-assessment. Level two, we're matching that 110 practices in the NIST. And then level three, a lot of the details of that are still unknown and being worked out, but it's gonna follow a lot of the practices in NIST 800-172.
Good news. I mean, my oversimplified brain here says, right, we started off with this huge menu at a new restaurant with a million different choices, and now we have beef, chicken, and fish. Right? Is that a fair analogy?
It's like a wedding.
Yeah.
That's a fair analogy. Threw me off my game there.
So are we shooting for fish, chicken, or beef?
but if you go into level two, there are multiple options here now. So the maybe vegetarian and fish at level two. So that was the big change here at level two. This has added some confusion, of course, is a level two. You're now at advanced level in CMMC 2.0, but they're saying, oh, some of you have prioritized acquisition data and some are non-prioritized acquisition data. Okay, that clarified everything. So what does that mean? Who's going to have to be, and what does that mean to us? Well, it means if you have the prioritized data, you do have to be certified every 3 years through a third party process. If you have the non-prioritized, you're going to do the annual assessment, just like self-assessment, just like level one organizations. They're figuring the majority of these companies are going to have to hit that just non-prioritized. The contract data is going to be very clear on if you have to be a certified level two. Otherwise, you're self-attesting, you're still being tracked in the SPRS system that the NIST utilized for scoring. And for that non-prioritized data, it's people that are making more, I've used this analogy many times, the widgets, or you might be making boots or clothing, something in that spectrum where, or you're a small machine shop making, when I say widgets, that small part of widget that's unidentifiable to how would that fit into that F-35 that Rich talked about earlier. If you can't take that part and initially figure out how it fits into the whole model, you're most likely going to hit that non-prioritized data, and you're only going to have to do the self-assessment. Though the self-assessment is a lot to take on for small organizations because it's an annual review of your maturity model. So you will have to go through that process. So the practices, though, so moving in, what else did this change? You probably heard that it eliminates the maturity process. We're still CMMC, cybersecurity maturity certification. So it did not eliminate all maturity practices. What that meant was the maturity of your policies and processes might not need to be in place for as long. When you are going for a CMMC 1.0 level three certification, which is in direct alignment now with level two, you didn't have to, or you had to show that all these practices were in place for at least a year. Now they're easing that and saying, okay, when they say eliminate maturity processes, let's say you're going for your certification tomorrow, you could have implemented these policies last month and you're meeting the maturity practice requirements on that. Some of the things that it eliminated, so we went from 110 or 130 controls in the new NIST or in the new CM, or I'm saying new CMMC 1.0. 2.0 is back to that 110 controls. So there are some things like advanced email security that those controls were eased or eliminated from the model. And so,
yeah, I mean, I guess just to kind of throw 2 cents out there again, right? It sort of seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, but you know, this new compliance model makes it a little bit more palatable for businesses to get into alignment. What we saw in 1.0 was that kind of level three was that watermark, right? Where everybody was shooting for sort of applicable across the board, included some things in level three that were pretty difficult to achieve, right? Financially, even from an IT practice, right? Trying to deploy, you know, the SIM and SOC solutions, you know, that were kind of the big stretch in level three. in this new model, we're seeing that some of that stuff is a little bit easier to attain, and we're talking about maybe a little less pressure for audit, right?
That's correct. Still mixed in there at different levels. So you hear that they're removing 20 controls from this model. You might not have to hit the same advanced level of these controls by removing those, but things like SIM for tracking, event management, they're still there. You just might not have to hit the same high level requirement that was in the previous version. Same with email security. Most of it eliminates some of the controls that are required, but with some of the controls leading up to that, you would still have to have some level of that security implemented to meet all the other controls. The other changes that we're seeing are from, you might hear from POAM, your plan of action and mitigation, and your SSP, so your system security plan. In 1.0, you had to close out all your POAM. So your POAM had to be 100% complete. So that plan of action and milestones, you would have had to meet each of those requirements before being certified or even gaining a contract. Now they're easing that and saying, well, as long as you have a POAM in place and you're close, the contract can look at and say, to evaluate that and say, okay, here are your gaps. That's acceptable. You can have this contract and work under your POAM until that's complete. So POAM and SSP still exist, just a little difference on how they're going to manage those.
Kind of an interesting approach. You know, I think, you know, the 1.0 and 2.0 differences are the sort of the teeth behind it. Pretty drastic change in approach and sort of thinking about, you know, if I'm a business owner manufacturing parts, you know, and impacted by this sort of thing, you know, pretty different way to think about it. And, you know, I think in coming off of 1.0 and all its complexity and the number of controls, you know, a welcome relief in from a compliance perspective, but also have to consider the why, right? Whenever, we own small business as well, right? And obviously we're subject to compliance and cybersecurity and have to think about the things we have to do to take care of our customers and their needs. You know, kind of thinking about the why, what is the reason, you know, that all of this CMMC compliance is kind of getting thrown in my direction? Why is this my problem? I think the JET is a great example. It's a big one, right? We as a country must have lost a lot of data for them to replicate a JET. That's a pretty big deal. You know, but I think a little bit about, you know, the way that our country works in the world, you know, from a political perspective and demonstrates power, right? Historically, that's been with nuclear power, right? I mean, that, you know, if we kind of boil it down, we sit at the table based on the number of nukes that the country has in comparison to Russia and China and
or firepower in general.
And firepower, yeah, right. But that's the classic way of thinking, right? And I think what we're seeing is the world shift. And obviously manufacturing is a huge part of that when it comes to the Department of Defense and where we're making investments, right? Or where other countries are making investments. And we're seeing other countries really invest more in fast, agile, you know, technology, in cyber related technology as a military power. And so what I see is that you know, our government's really kind of on the defensive to this, right? We're seeing it. We need to address it. And CMMC is a way for us as a nation to kind of pay attention and contribute to that. So I like that we've softened it and made it attainable. You know, right. But the why behind this is important. You know, the why behind this is that you know, if we're making parts that contribute to our national defense, then these things are very important.
And it's not even, it's not just defense contractors that should be looking at this either, because, you know, with all the ransomware attacks that are prevalent now. You know, any manufacturer that's making anything is vulnerable. One of the biggest myths, and I've talked to a lot of companies, they all very often they'll say, "Oh, I'm too small for any hacker to care about. I'm too small for them to worry about." And it has nothing to do with how small you are. You're not being targeted, right? These are opportunistic attacks, and you know there are these automated software programs that just go out and look for vulnerabilities and IP addresses and report back to the hackers and say, "Hey, we found these, you know, 1,000 websites or 1,000 networks that have security issues," and then they start automatically attacking and automatically, you know, sending malware payloads. And you know, it's not a matter of I'm too small or no one cares about me. It's just if you happen to have vulnerabilities in your network, they're going to get exploited at some point.
And think about, I think right now it's very sort of relevant to consider the supply chain issues that everybody's having, right? I'm sure we have DoD suppliers who rely on commercial supply chains, you know, to make their parts. If you were going to cripple, a particular military defense system, where would you strike? You could cripple a supply chain, you know, for a manufacturer that makes gaskets for an F-35 that keeps them grounded.
Nuts and bolts.
Exactly.
Cut right? off the nuts and bolts.
Exactly.
How do you assemble anything?
That's the world we live in. So you're absolutely right. It's not just those that are direct suppliers to the DoD. It's as a nation, sort of how we're approaching cybersecurity. It's very important. I didn't mean to take our webinar off into this meta world of cybersecurity. I don't know. To me, when I'm thinking about regulation and thinking about controls, it's very easy to get lost and to just kind of say, hey, I got to check the boxes here and just get this out of my way so I can keep doing what I do. And CMMC 2.0 in some ways has kind of given us more opportunity to be able to do that because we don't have Big Brother coming in the doors unless we're in a very specific category. Mm-hmm. But there's a responsibility here. And I believe that as a compliance body, you know, this is just an ease in. This is just a, okay, you know, we were assertive. You know, it didn't quite work out. You know, we're getting a lot of pushback, but to me, it's kind of a warning shot, a real warning shot, because this is not something that's going away, right? The self-attestation is a little bit of a, okay, you know, a little bit more time to get on board here, but this is not something that's going away. We've got to get ahead of it.
Yeah.
And it's also, a good.
You hit on a good thing. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's on the timing side of it. That's why we asked the question at the beginning. You know, we do talk about it behind closed doors. When we have these conversations, we talk about the manufacturers and what they're saying. You know, we've been talking about this for, you know, every time I talk to Rich, I feel like it goes back even further and further. Like I thought it was 2015. He's like, no, I think it was really 2013. Like, is this really making an impact? So that's why we asked the question, you know, when of the initial poll and saying, what are your thoughts on it? And is this really going to make a difference? Does this mean the timing is getting crunched? Are we really moving forward with this? Or are we just going to keep going through this like Groundhog Day over and over again?
Well, that's where the interim rule came into effect. And CMMC is starting to show up in contracts. So as soon as they hit your wallet, you know, it gets your attention. And you know, John mentioned, you know, checking off a box. The interesting thing about CMMC is it's not about checking off a box anymore. It has to be a culture shift in your organization. It has to be something that's ongoing, you know, just like continuous improvement. It has to be, because the threats are changing all the time. The landscape is ever changing. You know, there are more and more. There's a bigger attack surface now. When you're adding technology to your manufacturing environment, right? You're starting to put sensors everywhere, and you're starting to automate. You get SCADA systems and ERP systems and MRP systems running. MES. You know, it's like the more you automate your manufacturing facility, the more holes you open up. and the bigger the danger. So this has to be a culture change. Everybody has to be involved. It can't just be one person's responsibility. It has to be the entire company.
And you were talking too about, so we're getting asked these questions on, do we still do this? Like, okay, this has changed and morphed several times over the last few years. We thought our date was October 2025, I think was the last date for 1.0. Yes, we still need to be moving forward. What the DoD's requiring now is any current contract or upcoming contract will at least state meeting your NIST 800-171 requirements, but there'll be benefits that they're trying to enact to encourage organizations once 2.0 is finalized to say, yes, if you do it ahead of time, then you might have a better chance at gaining contracts. And so what is the new timeline? In November, they said it's okay, we need to give 60 days for public comment. So that 60 days has passed. I've been out there trying to find out what has the public comment period kind of drummed up, not hearing that as of yet. But so that 60 days has passed. Now we go into that rulemaking process. So it goes into a 9 to 24 month window of it goes through that process of, do these rules all align with our intent? What needs to change or may change to make it fit? So 2.0 might become 2.1 in 6 months before this is really rolled out. But one of the big changes we did see before or since November is that the DoD has released some new information. So they printed some documentation on scope guidance, so level one and level two scope guidance, CMMC 2.0 model overview, that's their biggest document, and then some assessment guides for both level one and level two, and the level three stuff will come later. But that's really important, is that we see some traction, that it's not just we're making these changes, but here's the documented meat behind that, the meat and potatoes, what you have to do to meet that 2.0. So even if you're curious about that, I can share a link to the website from the DoD that will link you to those documents. So if you do want to get started and read some of that data, it is out there, and I think everyone should take a look at it.
You yeah, said something earlier too, about I think, I don't know, or maybe it was Rich that may have said it as well. We talk about the repercussions. Obviously, Rich said when it hits your wallet, are there any other repercussions that may come out of this? I know we had talked about, you know, the self-certification process, and does that have any impacts, or is this really what it boils down to when it comes to just like the contracts? And if you don't do it, you're not going to get these contracts.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing is kind of a little bit of that, right? That you know, the primes will have some stake in their supply chain, right? And their posture and their risk tolerance for their supply chain, I'd imagine, will have some impact here. We've also heard some mumblings about, even with self-attestation, some personal stake from business leadership and ownership for falsifying. Right. And that's difficult, right? I mean, I think they're putting some accountability in business leadership to have a responsible posture, you know, for IT. And that's not something that I feel many business owners themselves feel very comfortable talking about, right? So how do you deal with that? That's a challenge. You know, to what degree that, you know, is the government going to sue business owners? I don't know. You know, so for me, to some degree, the ambiguity makes me as a business owner a little uncomfortable, right? If we were, and we do provide services to primes and to many DoD suppliers, we don't have controlled unclassified information, so there's a little difference, but we have to be very wary of this stuff, and the guidance you know, makes me uncomfortable. I personally would feel like at least having some some command, some control over the general posture, and having a good sense of where I am in sort of relation to what they're saying, right? Okay, maybe I sit at 80% for a while, right? And I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this, but I know that I'm 20% from hitting this mark if I need it. That would make me feel much better, right? From a personal liability perspective, from a winning a contract perspective, whatever that's going to be, just having command over that situation and feeling secure is kind of a what we're talking about, right? That's a big deal.
Yeah, and that and the timing. I mean, this isn't something you can wait until the day before it's due, you know, and cram. You know, this is a process, and it's not a super fast process. It's a pretty complex process. So it requires, you know, some forethought and some planning. And if you're 80 or 90% there, then it's much easier to get that last 10 or 20%. But if you're, you know, 2% there, then you're already lost. It's trickling down now. I had a conversation with the Air Force a few weeks ago, and they distribute a lot of SBIR grants and STTR grants to mostly small companies, but not always small companies. And they're requiring those companies to comply with CMMC now because they're working on R&D on products that could potentially leak classified information. And academia. There's a lot of universities that do a lot of DoD R&D work and development work. And they're realizing, oh, right, they're part of the DoD supply chain as well, technically. And now they're requiring those organizations to comply. So it's gonna trickle down.
Rich, this is a little off. We hadn't talked about this in the past, but you know, I very often, you know, while I'm out with friends who own manufacturing companies, giving out free consulting work, right? They give me a couple of beers and they ask questions. The question I get often is, give me the definition of controlled unclassified information. If all this stuff is centered around that, I mean, we're talking about ambiguous compliance with at its core. I mean, have you gotten a much clearer definition as to what CUI is?
That's been contentious since the beginning of CMMC. And it ultimately comes down to the prime or the, you know, the customer who's providing you with the CAD files or whatever else to let you know what that CUI is and what information needs to be protected. If they can't tell you, then obviously you can't secure it.
Right. So if I own a business and all I really to date have sort of respected is what I've been told is CUI, but someday that definition becomes much more strict. How do I deal with that?
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent question. And that's where, you know, being 80 or 90% of the way there makes it easier just to switch on the controls for whatever information you're being told is CUI. I think that the safe bet is to just protect anything that comes from a client. You know, if you're from your prime customer or your first tier customer or whatever it is, and I think that's good for any practice. If you're a contract manufacturer, you want to protect the information that's your customer's information that's going to potentially leak and lose your business. You know, it's kind of like, you know, doctor-patient privilege.
Yeah, and that's a good practice, and that's what we're telling many of our clients now is that, well, treat it all. If the contract has some CUI in it, treat it all as CUI, and you know you're protected. If your systems are in place and ready to protect CUI, you're there. You don't have anything to worry about. And all organizations are still trying to implement this. So some, even smaller groups within the larger primes, aren't always identifying the CUI properly. So it's better to protect yourself and make sure that those things are safe and secure through the entire process.
Right.
You guys talk about the process. Is there an idea that you can give
on how long, you know, and could you estimate, you know, I know we talked about this in the previous podcast we did. We had Harley on from the Coding House and he walked through everything with us. But for people that are, you know, maybe first time really getting into this today, can you give them an idea and timeline for that?
And I think that was a good example. And since Harley had shared some of his story too, that they are a small organization that when they received their first contract request to meet some of these requirements, their expectation was, is this something we can turn around in a month and be certified and compliant? And I think as they worked through the process too, they realized, okay, this is from the beginning, if you haven't looked at it at all, you're looking at a year and year plus out. It's not something you're going to turn around in a few months' time.
I think we tried to highlight in that case, right? So they were doing some new business with a prime. So they got kind of the new supply chain process from this prime, right? It's, you know, I'm sure there's a process for evaluating the existing supply chain and keeping that up to snuff, at least to date. What they got was sort of the new hire, right, procedure, which was pretty vicious. Not vicious in a bad way, but yes, okay, self-attestation, but show us a little bit more, right? And it wasn't something that was federally mandated. That was a good example of how Prime, you know, can take control of that and add a little bit more color in comparison to what CMMC says you have to do.
Right. And if you're required to protect it, your subcontractors are required to protect it. If you might share this data with a subcontractor, you're required to ensure they have the same level of protection from that cybersecurity standpoint.
Right. Is everybody scared now?
Yeah. Do you guys have anything else, like any other, you know, are we thinking, you know, you said possibly 2.1, are we thinking we're going to go that way? You know, do you think there'll be some more, like, and Rich always says this, it's just like continuous improvement. It's got to, we always have to stay on it and hopefully they will, but do you think we'll be seeing that again this year? Or do you think we might be kind of quiet for a little bit?
Well, when we're talking about a process that might take 9 to 24 months to hash out the rules on it, we will likely see some changes throughout that process. So some interim rules again.
Yeah, it moves at the speed of government, which is not very fast. But these things have been around for long enough that companies should be at least seriously thinking about what it's going to take and when they're going to roll this out, and when to start addressing. I mean, there's a lot of low hanging fruit, you know, in a lot of companies. You know, do you have passwords on your email? No. You know, super basic stuff. And a lot of it's low cost, no cost, you know, just policy procedure kind of stuff you can put in place very quickly and very easily. Just to, you know, start with a Band-Aid or two and then, you know, work your way up. And again, you know, we've got programs in place, we've got funding to back it up. You know, it's as long as you're paying your taxes to the state, you pretty much qualify for these grants that most companies don't realize are out there. You know, I spent many years in the private sector or manufacturing, had no idea this stuff was available because you're just used to being self-sufficient. And it turns out that the government is there to help, you know, and it's largely because, you know, without this, you know, companies don't survive. And it's in everybody's best interest to keep manufacturers manufacturing. And you know, keep them employing people and just keep the whole economy moving. And that's why the government is interested in making this work and helping out.
I'm curious, Haley, the question you asked in the poll, I'm really curious about what folks, how do they feel?
It was actually the third answer, which was, I think this is the push they needed. And this 1.0 to 2.0 thing is the real deal. There was a couple in the nothing. We've been hearing the same thing for years, but we like you guys, so thought we would join.
Well, I was going to say, it made me feel really good for a second about the state of our cybersecurity, and I must have missed that in the first question. So apparently that's much a stronger sentiment than hanging out with us, which.
Yeah, but I did just get one that says they're in the middle. So there may be something happening. So we joined the webinar just in case. So, you know, I think we talk about it a lot. We do joke about it. And that's why we ask this question, because a lot of people do say, okay, how does this really impact me? Is it really going to impact me? And they just keep seeing timelines. And, you know, Rich made a statement. He's like, I can just bury my head in the sand again. And, you know, and it'll go away. And is that really where they are right now and what they're thinking? But we always say, you know, you may actually think that, but that's not, we talk about how it affects your bottom line, and we talk about what it could impact, you know, to you later on down the road. And that, you know, I asked Rich the question yesterday, if we have the funding, what's the difference of providing the funding versus just doing it themselves? You know, and he's like, no, you always want to use the funding, you know, like it's some people may go into it and be like, it's a tax write-off and I'll get this done, but we have that available. So knowing those resources are out there, we really can walk you through pretty easily every step of this, you know, and we start, you know, Rich comes in and talks to you and what do you need and what are you looking for? And then Synergex comes in and they get you going on this path, and Rich works you through, and we have a grants team that comes in, and it's literally walking. We help you get through the process. We don't do it for you, but we show you and kind of, you know, advise you. We're business development advisors is what Rich is classified as, if we're going to go for classified information and at Mass MEP. And he's a business development advisor. So he advises, you know, these manufacturers on how to do this. So we're here, we help. And it isn't, you know, we're always there. We come back, and I know you guys do the same thing. You know, it's not like you're not done with Harley at the Coding House. You know, that's something you'll have that relationship and that connection, and you'll network back and forth with that. You know, there's other things that are going to come up he's going to need as well. So,
you know, a couple of things at play too. You typically don't know what you don't know. And our manufacturing clients, you know, they're experts at what they do, which is manufacturing. It's not IT security. And you know, for them, a lot of times it's a little daunting. It's a little confusing, and makes sense because it's not their primary business. So that's why we come in and we act as an extension of their workforce, and we bring in the experts to actually fix the problems and use us for all we're worth.
It's a good thing. I mean, you know, we fancy ourselves IT experts, and there is no way I could make some of the cool stuff I see at some of these clients. So we're happy to complement those skill sets with what we do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see a specialist, right?
Yeah.
When you have health issues, you don't go down to the bar and ask the bartender for advice. You know, you find the right source or resource.
It's a complicated world. You know, Pete and I are not the type, you know, to go straight geek to try to impress people. But it is a complicated world, and it's not getting simpler. You know, we work with all sorts of clients, nonprofits, banks, right, commercial space, all of it. And we get similar sorts of questions about technology, right? So everything's going to the cloud. Do I really have to worry about this, right? CMMC 2.0, do I really need to worry about this? It's a good question, because I think some of the marketing around some of this stuff claims to make your life simpler or claims to alleviate some pain. But you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, there's been no major innovations in the core of technology. Servers, computers, processors, they all still exist. They just exist somewhere else, which makes it a little bit more difficult to secure, right? If you think about it, we're now working on things we can't see. They live in the cloud, right? And they need to be CMMC compliant. Awesome. So that's what we specialize in, you know, and that those are the sorts of things that Pete and I and the team here, we actually really enjoy, right? And there are ways to simplify that and make it applicable across industries. And the compliance kind of just helps, you know, put some frame around that and give us a sheet of music, you know, that we can measure against to make sure that we're doing the right things. So we're thrilled to be an ally to anybody who's listening right now. We obviously have a very strong partnership with Mass MEP and can help to supplement any of the services that they provide from a cybersecurity lens. And we're always happy to do that.
Yeah.
And we appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Before we go though, we always get one tip usually. John and Pete always have something really good. Do you guys have anything today? Like, I've changed all my passwords now. What was the last one? I mean, there's always something that you have that we learn from every time. Do you have one that maybe you can give everybody right before we close out?
You got one, Pete? I can think of one.
Go ahead.
All right. This one might be a little daunting, but it actually is a really nice tip for those out there who own businesses. Microsoft is starting to get their stuff together when it comes to, well, at least to the CMMC 1.0 sheet of music. I don't know if it's been updated yet, but it's worth checking out with your IT service provider or in your office tenant. Within that office portal, right, there is a service called Compliance Manager. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So Compliance Manager within Office 365 will deploy a template to kind of just what it knows, just its world, right? Email, SharePoint, if we're using OneDrive, those sorts of things. And we'll give you kind of quick little checklist of best practice and securities that might help to spur some interesting perspective, right, on how secure your Office 365 environment is. For most of our customers, that's just a small portion of the world for them, but it is a tool we've used and is pretty darn helpful. I believe if you're paying for the higher licenses in 365, you can even use a CMMC template to help measure just that piece of your world. It's pretty weedy, I'll warn you. But it is a pretty cool automated service. It's a click of a button and it examines your environment. So it's kind of cool.
Super. I bet Matt's our IT manager, is probably in there doing it right now. I know I'm going to do it when we get off. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's great. Thanks for that. That's see, every time I know there's something in there. That's why I have to ask that question, because I know you've got something stashed.
A golden nugget.
Yeah, it's not as fun as like the passwords and scaring people about their televisions and you know, Amazon devices at home. But it's applicable.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I kind of like those smart home devices, because I just have conversations about things and stuff just shows up.
Oh, here's another cool one for the ones that want more of a home applicable one. Do you know that you can review all of the voice recordings that Alexa records? Mm-hmm. Even the stuff that like it doesn't recognize, like if you say, hey Amanda, if it thinks you said Alexa, it'll record you and you can listen to it.
Yep.
Really fun if you have little kids.
this is too much, big brother.
You can also program custom answers to certain questions.
That's right. That's
you can say, you know, who's the smartest person in the world?
Get out.
Yep.
Oh, I'm doing
Sullivan.
It. I'm doing it. Yeah, totally doing it. I think we have one in our house that we're not supposed to even have. Like we don't allow those in our home, but one snuck its way in somewhere. One of these kids brought one in. So I might try and figure out how to program it. That's exciting. Yeah,
that's a fun one.
Who's the smartest person in the world? Your mom. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Thank you, Rich. Thanks, Pete. Thanks, John. Thanks, everyone. And we will talk to everybody soon.
Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmap.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.